Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. I have a fabulous show for you today. We are going to have James Twyman with us. He is known as the Peace Troubadour, and I connected with him over 25 years ago listening and bringing in his work into my psyche, if you will, and this is going to be fantastic. I am truly honored to have him on the show. So this is a show for you to sit back and relax and truly listen to the wisdom that is going to be shared today. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back, but the real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS stands for belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. Find out more about me and the services I offer. Go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, James Twyman, is the author of 16 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The Moses Code. He is known as the Peace Troubadour, and he has been invited by world leaders and peace organizations to perform in countries like Iraq, Croatia, Bosnia, and South Africa. He is the founder of the Seminary of Spiritual Peacemaking, which has ordained more than 600 ministers from around the world. He lives in Mexico, and he is the director of the Namaste Lake Chapala Spiritual Community. Welcome, James.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you.
It is great to have you here, and I need to mention your website and too, and that's JamesTwyman.com. And
Actually, JamesTwyman.com has been hijacked. I'm trying to get it back. So if you go to JamesTwyman.com, you won't see anything from me. But if you do go to World Peace Pulse, that's the best. That's the best website.
Wow, they did a great job of hijacking you, because it like reads like it's you. Wow. But anyway, fantastic book. The book is Giovanni and the Camino of Saint Francis. You seem to have a very long relationship, if you will, with St. Francis. Even back in 2018, you took vows to become a Franciscan hermit, and of course you're living in Mexico. So how did this connection come about?
Well, you know, I think some connections have just always been there, and if you believe in past lives, that might be a possibility. I've often felt that my association with Francis may even go back 800 years when he was with us. Mm-hmm. But I've always, in this lifetime, always just felt very drawn to that deep spirituality, that deep embodied spirituality that Francis was so instrumental in sharing. Mm-hmm. And most people, they know what I call the birdbath St. Francis. They see the statues in the gardens with the birds, and though that is a part, maybe even a small part, of who he was so much more than that. In fact, many people attribute the beginning of the Renaissance to Francis and others, but At the very least, it certainly was the end of a very dark age when he was with us. And his willingness and his desire to simply do what Jesus said, to see if it was possible to really live that, it inspired so many people then and now. And yet he was a very complicated person. He was a man of his time. He was someone who he called his body Brother Ass, for example. He would just do so much penance and so much austerity. But you can't judge someone like him from our perspective. You need to judge him from his time. Mm-hmm. And when you do that and you realize what was happening in the world at that time, really in many ways not much different than today, the corruption and the inequality, all these different things which he leveled with the way that he lived and loved. And so for me, my love story with Francis, well, it goes way back, but it certainly took a big turn when I was 18 and first entered the Franciscan Order mm-hmm. in Chicago right out of high school. Mm-hmm. And I was there for a couple of years, and quite honestly, there were a few things that I was being asked to give up in order to be ordained that I wasn't sure I was ready to give up because I didn't really understand. I was 18 and didn't have much experience in that realm. Uh-huh. So I left and always kept the option of maybe going back. And there have been quite a number of times when I have played with that idea, been with other communities. But for sure, that Franciscan spirituality has never left me. And there is a saying, once a Franciscan, always a Franciscan. And that's because it's just so seductive. It pulls you in a way that can't be described. Mm-hmm. And so, as you said, in 2018, I decided to consecrate that commitment. And I took vows as a Franciscan hermit. A lot of people ask what that means. What does it mean to be a hermit today? Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean living in a cave and having no contact with people. All it really means is it's a life of dedication and contemplation. And I live here, as you said, in Mexico. We have a beautiful community. Right outside of Guadalajara, there's an area called Lake Chapala. Mm-hmm. It's actually the biggest expat area in the whole world for Americans and Canadians. There are more Americans and Canadians moving here than to any other place in the world for various reasons. But mm-hmm. we started this beautiful community here about a year and a half ago, and it just is growing so fast, and it's so vibrant. We get together every morning. We have sessions, and we sing and meditate together. Right now, there are about 30 people or so who live here with me. But I have, at the very top of the community, what I call my bird's nest. It's just a little tiny room that I'm sitting in right now as we speak mm-hmm. with my guitars and ukuleles. And this is where I spend 95% of my day, uh-huh. just being here and just doing my best to do what Francis did, which was to see what it would be like to imitate what is perfect. Let me see if I can explain that, because this is a very important point. This is what Francis did. As I said before, he wanted to see if it was possible to imitate Jesus. Mm-hmm. A better way to say that might be, he wanted to see if it was possible to imitate the Christ. Now, usually we associate Jesus with the Christ, but mm-hmm. a lot of people think it's his last name, like his last name is Christ, and that certainly isn't true. We're all being called to embody that same vibrancy. And Francis, in imitating Jesus, because he was imitating what was true within him, mm-hmm. the truth of that experience was automatic. And so he transformed, and he became a powerful mystic and saint to the point that 800 years ago, we see him everywhere we look practically. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that when we imitate what is true, or we imitate what is perfect within us, even if we don't really know it consciously, that experience is inevitable. That's what Francis did, and that's what I try to do here in our community, is just to live that life of deep contemplation, which is so needed today, and just to be present to that energy that I was inspired by when I was a child.
Okay. It seems that you've in your work today that you are taking that energy of Jesus through your music, through even your presentations, and just going out into the world and healing on a very different level. Does that make sense to you?
Well, yes. In fact, let's back up a little bit and I'll explain how that all happened. First of all, I've always been a musician. In fact, I had a beautiful experience only a week and a half ago. I just finished doing a long tour for the new book, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, and one of the events was in Rochester, New York. I was invited by a beautiful center there called the Assisi Institute, which actually is a Yogananda center. It's Francis and Claire are both big parts of their energy, but really they're a Kriya Yoga center. And I was there, and lo and behold, someone showed up that I hadn't seen since I was 12 years old. And that was Father Vince Ferraro, who was the young priest who first taught me how to play guitar back when I was 11 and 12 years old. And that's where it really all started. I realized that there's a magic in sharing music and prayer and the depth that you can go to. And that's always been with me, thanks to Father Vince. And yet, when it all came together, it was about, well, actually, I was going to say it was about 25 years ago. It was actually 25 years ago and 1 month ago. Mm-hmm. It was in April of 1994 that a friend of mine gave me a sheet of paper that had on it the 12 peace prayers from the 12 major religions of the world. Now, these were prayers that had been prayed in 1987, when the Pope John Paul II called the leaders of the 12 major religions of the world to, of all places, Assisi, the home of St. Francis, not to discuss or argue, but to simply pray the prayer from their tradition, to show that whatever our faith is, peace is at the very core. And so the Dalai Lama came for the Buddhist, and all the other leaders came, and a friend of mine brought those prayers back to the U.S. and began sharing them. And when I received them in 1994, I had this profound experience where suddenly I heard music. And as I read each prayer, and I picked up my guitar and played along, and within 1 hour, I had put all 12 of these prayers to music. And I realized this was a gift. And, you know, you don't write 12 songs in 1 hour. That's just almost impossible.
Right.
But there was an energy. There was a momentum that was there that just grabbed me. And that's when I realized I'm the peace troubadour, and that's all I want to do. In fact, then my whole idea was to be like a penniless troubadour like St. Francis, just sharing these prayers. And yet then I began traveling around and writing books, and they became successful. So it feels like now finally I'm getting back to that troubadour energy after so many years. But as you said, Monique, there is something that is so beautiful about the expression through music that takes us so deep, that bypasses those intellectual filters and brings us to the real core of who we are. So it's a very special thing for me.
Yes, it is. Folks, we're speaking with James Twyman. We're talking about his latest book, and that's Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. You can check him out at his website, and that's worldpeacepulse.com, and we're going to delve into that into a little bit. James, absolutely loved the book. When I was reading it, first of all, it's beautifully written. The story, for me, transported me, back to as if I was walking along the path with Anna and Giovanni. Was that an intent of yours from the beginning?
Absolutely. And just for anyone who doesn't know what the Camino of St. Francis is, let me explain that. Okay. Many people know about the Camino de Santiago, which is the 1,100-year-old Camino through Spain that thousands of people walk per year. And probably people who are listening to this right now, some of them have walked it. This is similar, but it's different. The Camino of St. Francis is in Italy, obviously, and it follows the small little trails and paths that Francis would have walked 800 years ago, going from village to village. And I have walked it and led groups many times on the Camino.
And I would say it was the
The first time I did that was when I was walking with a group, and I just began to imagine this story of this woman named Anna, and she's had a tough life, and she's been guided to walk the Camino to get to Assisi, and she meets this young Italian guy named Giovanni. And I just began to play with the story as I walked the Camino myself. And I didn't think I was going to really write it down, but in fact, I had decided that I wasn't going to write another book, or at the very least, not write another book until it was like, really, until I had to, because I'd written 15 books at that point, and and it just wasn't, I just wasn't feeling like it. I didn't want to write a book unless I really had to, and this book, Giovanni, just kept nagging at me and pulling me. So I finally sat down and began writing it maybe 8 months ago, and it just took hold, and I love telling stories, and I think it's a really beautiful story between Anna and Giovanni. So it was a great pleasure to write it, and as I've traveled around sharing it over the last couple of months, it's been great to hear how people are responding to it as well.
Well, people are going to absolutely positively love it. And you know what I really liked about Anna is something that I always say happens when you don't pay attention to spirit. She was in a bookstore, and I guess the guide to the Camino of St. Francis falls and knocks her on her head. So I talk about the 2x4 upside your head. So spirit has definitely interesting ways of gaining your attention. And I love the
fact
that she paid attention. And, you know, the book was healing, and it showed her healing process. But as you go through it, for me at least, it was, well, there are certain things that came up for me to take a look at and heal if I'm ready to. And I think that everybody who reads this will have the same experience. Again, was that an intent of yours?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we learn best through stories, and healing is universal. When you read a story about a beautiful healing, of course, you're healed as well. And that's the beautiful thing about a parable, and that's why the greatest spiritual teachers have always taught through stories and parables, because we can access the depth and the core so much more easily when we hear it presented in that way. And writing it, for me, is the same. As I'm writing a book like that, it takes me so deep. I remember a few books ago, my favorite book that I've ever written is the book called The Barn Dance. Mm-hmm. And it was written as a way of healing after my former wife, Linda, was murdered in Chicago in 2005. And it was a huge part of my own healing journey and working through the grief of that loss. And I've never even heard of a book where more people have said, I read the whole thing in one night, or I couldn't put it down, I just read it all the way through, because they felt it, because I had to go so deep to get it. Mm-hmm. And so my healing translates into the book, into the story, and then people feel that themselves. And the people who love The Barn Dance the most are the ones who've lost people themselves, and it just helps them to process through the grief that they're feeling. So yeah, healing is universal, and that's why stories take us there, because they touch a different part of our mind and heart that if I was just saying this is how you do it, it wouldn't be nearly as effective as hearing a story.
Right, because the story gets into your soul, so to speak, and speaks to you.
Sure.
Now, how does one find the courage to truly open their heart like you did after your former wife's murder and heal the wounds from the past? I mean, it seems so daunting sometimes.
Well, sure, and it's going to be different for each individual, but it's just the choice between love and pain. I mean, when you're in grief, do you want to heal? Do you want to move into a space of love and compassion? If you want, then you have to open to that. Okay. Unfortunately, many people don't, and they stay, or they just the grief becomes concretized within them. But there are 1,000 ways, but we all need to find the way that works for us, for me, part of that was writing that book. Mm-hmm. For others, it's going to be different. But there is a way to do it, but it all comes down to forgiveness. I've been a student of A Course in Miracles for over 25 years, and A Course in Miracles is really the path of forgiveness. And A Course in Miracles actually, it defines forgiveness in a different way than we're used to. In fact, the common understanding of forgiveness, it would call forgiveness to attack. Because what it really is me thinking that I've risen above someone who has hurt me or done something wrong to me, and in my exalted state of being above them, I forgive them. And that's really an attack. What forgiveness is from the perspective of A Course in Miracles is the understanding that the offense that I'm experiencing or that I felt in reality never actually occurred. Now that's a whole new level. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're recovering from a terrible thing that happened to my wife, it takes great courage to go there. It takes great surrender to go there. But the transformation, if you do have that courage, is tremendous.
Okay. When you went through the energy of what happened with your wife, how did you get past the anger of her being gone, the anger of what happened to her?
Forgiveness.
Just that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple. We tend to overcomplicate things.
Uh-huh.
And it really is just my willingness to forgive and to see it differently.
Okay. Boy, we could sure use a whole lot of that in the world today.
Sure could.
If you could speak to the man who sits in the White House today, what would you tell him? How would you counsel him?
Oh, goodness. Wow, you had to go there, didn't you?
Well, just a line.
I would say this is not about you. I mean, Donald Trump, in my mind, he has a great deal of something that we all have, which is narcissism. I mean, ultimately, we're all narcissists because we believe in the identity that we claim, whether it be Monique or Jimmy or Donald. We believe that that's the most important thing, mm-hmm. that this identity has importance, and this identity is what counts. And so Donald Trump, who is, in my mind, a supreme narcissist, mm-hmm. really thinks that everything that's happening is all about him. So the lesson for all of us is the same lesson for him. This has nothing to do with you, because the you that you define, the you that you think you are, isn't even there. It doesn't exist. It's just an idea that you have in your mind, a concept or an identity that is going to be here today and gone tomorrow, that just fades like the morning mist. But we are so locked into it. That's the problem. We call it the ego. We're so locked into this image, this identity that we've claimed, that we believe ourselves to be, that it seems so hard for us to let it go. And so when I say the identity that you claim as Monique or that I claim as Jimmy isn't even really there, we then want to defend it. Mm-hmm. What do you mean it's not really there? I mean, I am who I am. This is me. I know it seems that way. I know it feels like that. But there comes a moment in the mystic's journey when that fades. There comes a moment in the contemplative journey where that just dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, no, this is not who I am. Who I really am is eternal. Who I really am is so much bigger than anything I could ever begin to imagine. So whether it be Donald Trump or you or me or anyone else, it really just comes down to my willingness to realize that the truth of who I am is larger than anything I could ever begin to imagine, and my willingness to see that in others, to be that gift to others. And if I can do that, then the dissolving process I talked about earlier starts to happen on its own.
Okay. Now, does this realization come as the soul grows? And again, if you can believe in past lives, which I do, as the soul grows and experiences different lifetimes and gains knowledge, or is it something that you can just claim in a certain lifetime if you want to, and then move forward?
Okay, well, the first way I'll answer that question is that the soul doesn't grow.
Okay.
The soul is what it has always been. It would be the same as saying the truth in you, that the truth in you will always be true. It doesn't become more true, okay?
Okay.
So that truth within us, that eternal nature that we are, is always whole, is always there. Our problem is that we have enacted an alternative, a possible alternative to the truth of who I am now. And that's called the ego. That's called the identity. And the reason we've done that is simply because we are somehow, for some reason, afraid of the truth of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've enacted a shadow. It's almost like you're standing there on a bright, sunny day, and the sun is behind you, and it casts a shadow onto the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so you decide, instead of realizing who you really are, that which is casting the shadow, you decide that you're the shadow. And all I'm saying is that at no time is that shadow real. Even though you've made it very real, even though we've all tried to design this identity that seems very concrete,
mm-hmm.
it's literally just a shadow of who we really are. And you can take lifetimes, if indeed multiple lifetimes are true. I mean, the truth is, I don't know anything. And this is a big step right here, to come to the point where I realize I don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you come to that place of humility or that place of emptying, and that's when you realize the journey has begun. So you could do it if multiple lifetimes are real, or you can do it right now. There's nothing stopping any of us from stepping into that right now, except for the fear that created the identity itself. But it doesn't have to, there's nothing to be afraid of, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I'm afraid of is an idea or a concept. But if I can lay that aside and just step forward, then, well, it just happens on its own, really.
Yes, it does happen on its own. I'd like to talk to you a bit about your collaboration with the late Dr. Wayne Dyer. Could
mm-hmm.
you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, Wayne, as you know, is such a wonderful, beautiful teacher and man, and he was always so generous to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we knew each other very briefly, you know, seeing each other at conferences or sitting together at dinner, but we weren't good friends. And yet there was always just a beautiful energy. And I think part of the reason that there was that beautiful energy is that he was as dedicated to St. Francis as I was. He loved St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that really brought us together. And I had written the book, The Moses Code, and there was also a movie that many people have seen. And then the third thing I produced around that book was a meditation CD that at that time we called The Moses Code Frequency. And it turned out that Wayne was the biggest fan of that meditation. He told me that he listened to it sometimes three times a day. He loved it, and he had his kids listening to it, and he would always talk about it at all of his talks and all of his lectures. And finally, Reed Tracy, who's the president of Hay House, came to me and said, how do you feel about rebranding this with Wayne, and Wayne can do an introduction, and as he loves it so much and he's talking about it so much, maybe we can put it out again with both of your names on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took me about a half a second to say yes. I love that idea because okay. I'd love to do anything with Wayne. And so we did that, and it came out in 2012, that meditation, which is now called the I Am Wishes Fulfilled meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it online under that title. And the one of the funny things, I mean, I knew it was doing really well because I was hearing from so many people every day who just love it. But it took me about 5 years before someone finally told me that it was a Billboard chart bestseller. It was actually the eighth
number one
best-selling. Oh. Well, it was number one for a long time, but for the whole uh-huh. year, it was number eight. And no one, I'm going to get a drink of water here. Something's
okay.
in my throat
well,
in a second.
You, yes, you can get your drink of water. We need to
okay,
hear his
go.
Words. He needs to be clear.
Yes, so I'm not choking. Yeah, it was an extraordinary thing that so many people were listening to this. And what it is, just to explain it, is it's a frequency that, well, I don't want to say we discovered, because it was really discovered through my friend Jonathan Goldman.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Jonathan if he would do some research to see if there was any relationship between the name of God that was given to Moses at the burning bush, which is, we translate it as the I am that I am, but in Hebrew it's Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, mm-hmm. to see if there was any relationship between that name and sound or frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jonathan did the research, and he found something that no one had ever discovered before, which is these two frequencies that go together that are, I could talk about it for an hour and go into the ancient Kabbalistic gematria numbers and all of that. But suffice it to say, there were these a hidden code that was within that name that, when translated into frequency, takes you so deep,
mm-hmm.
so profound. And so that's what the frequency is. That's why people love it so much, because you don't have to understand it with your mind. In fact, it's better if you don't even know anything about it. But if you listen to it and just let it take you, it takes one so deep, and it's such a profound experience, unlike anything I've ever heard before.
And folks, if you haven't experienced it, it truly is an experience. So do yourself a favor. Love yourself. And, you know, go get it and take a listen. It will help you tremendously. Now, James, you produced or directed 7 feature films, including Indigo and The Redwood Highway, but you have a musical coming out on Broadway in 2020. Tell us about that.
I do, yeah. Well, what happened when I wrote the book Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, I knew that I was going to be on tour talking about it, but doing a book tour talking about a novel is kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know what I could do that would be really vibrant, but I had this idea to write a one-man musical based on the life of St. Francis. And so I wrote the musical. It didn't take very long at all, and I started performing it on tour. So for the last month, 2 months, I think I've done it maybe 25 or 26 times.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, for both the audience and for me, it's so transformative. For me, stepping literally into the sandals of St. Francis and acting as him. I have to say, I've done a lot of fun and cool things in my life, but this is the best. I am loving it. And the audiences seem to love it as well. So, suddenly, in the midst of all of that energy, the invitation to come and do it as an off-Broadway show in New York next year came.
Mm-hmm.
So next year, starting in the middle of February, I'll be performing the musical Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, one-man musical based on the life of St. Francis, in a beautiful church just off Broadway called it's called the Church in the Village. And what I should tell you, Monique, mm-hmm. is not only about the musical, but how I'm going to be getting to New York, because this is the biggest part.
Okay.
It really felt important to me to, as much as possible, to do this as Francis would have done it. So for about a month and a half before I get to New York, I'm going to be traveling across the country, beginning in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
doing the performance, doing the musical in different places on my way to New York. And as I travel from place to place, I'll be doing so penniless, having no idea how I'm getting from city to city, relying completely upon the generosity and the love of others. And then when I get to each city, I'll be living with the poor, living in shelters, even living on the street when necessary, mm-hmm. and inviting them to come as our guest to the performance. So, for example, in New York, I'll be living in a shelter, and all day, during the day, we'll be passing out invitations to the homeless to come and to join us. because this is what Francis would have done. He would have brought us together. He wouldn't just say, well, tickets are $30, and if you can pay the price, you can come. He would open the door. And then the other thing we're going to do is every day we're going to make a big, huge pot of soup. And it's going to be the most unique soup kitchen or maybe even dinner theater ever.
Uh-huh.
Because everyone, people who bought tickets, people who are our guests, will come and they'll be able to enjoy a meal together, enjoy the musical. And that's how St. Francis would have done it, and I'm excited to do it that way myself.
Oh, you talk about stepping out in faith, you going from Los Angeles to New York the way that you just described, and then the healing that you're going to provide for people, absolutely astounding. I wish you the absolute best with that. I got tingles when you were talking about it, so I know it's going to be just fantastic and very well received. Now, your website, worldpeacepulse.com. When people visit there, what are they going to find?
Oh, they'll find all sorts of things. We've got new programs that we're offering. You can listen to a couple of years ago, I've done it two or three times now. I've recorded music for mm-hmm. all 365 lessons from A Course in Miracles. You can find that there.
Mm-hmm.
And the music and the books and all sorts of fun things.
Okay. Well, the one thing that I found and signed up for actually was the levitation course. I've always been interested in it, and I'm going to spend that 40 minutes, 40 days, and see where it takes me. So thank you
Beautiful.
Very much for for putting that out there. James, our time is almost up. What pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience today?
You know, the only thing that comes to me, Monique, is the message that I would give to Donald Trump that you asked about,
mm-hmm.
which is to realize that this is not about the you that you think you are, but this is about the truth of you that you've always been and will always remain. In other words, the truth of you, your soul, the enlightened wholeness of who you are is there right now. It's not going to, it doesn't grow, it doesn't increase. It's full and whole right now. And all you need to do is to open up your eyes. And the way, there's a trick to doing that. The way that you open up your eyes and see or remember who you are is by giving that gift to others, by willing to see through how other people are presenting themselves and to realize that every person you come in contact with is an angel in disguise. Or you could say every person that you meet is the Christ or the beloved, whatever word you want to use, to mm-hmm. see them as that. And the more you choose to do that, the more you remember that wholeness within you as well.
Okay, thank you. Very well said. Folks, we've been speaking with James Twyman. The book is Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. It's available everywhere. Do yourself a favor and go get it. It's a very lighthearted novel that will transport you in time and allow you to think deep within yourself. And James, thank you for being here, and thank you for everything that you have brought to the physical.
Thank you, dear. It was an honor to be here with you, Monique.
Oh, likewise. And to the audience, thank you. And the divine in me honors the divine in you. When you're ready to shift your vibration and raise your energy, you can give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of opening your eyes and heart with love. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.